Good evening, everyone. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and our Paradigm Shifter today is very exciting. He's just put out the 15th anniversary edition, and it's a revised edition. Some of you will be very excited to hear that. Nothing in this book is true, but it's exactly how things are. So welcome to the show, Bob Frizzell.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Veronica. Glad to be here.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. This is quite the book, us through the history. I think what really blew my socks off at first was that you're talking about on our planet, we've been alive here in some form or another for 500,000 years. Is that right?
A little bit longer than that. It depends on where you want to go with that, but as far as I can tell, we, meaning Homo sapiens, have been around for little over 200,000 years, you know, roughly 200,000, 200 plus years like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just a drop in the bucket compared to the history of this planet.
Wow.
That there appears to be a planetary history that goes back at least 500 million years.
Hmm. But not in our human species, right?
No, not humans, but I'll tell you what, many, if not most of them, have been levels of awareness, on levels of awareness that is so far beyond where we're at today that we can barely even begin to conceive of where many of them were at.
And I noticed you said that each different kind of life form that's lived, that's inhabited this planet, seems to go through, this is what I took from it, seems to mm-hmm. go through five levels or five stages of evolution or consciousness and then leaves. Is that right?
Correct.
Is that what we're doing?
Well, that's an interesting question. Let's just try and fill that in a little bit. From the 500 million year history perspective, I think that you need to look at the planet as though it's a star seed, which as far as I can tell, in fact, it is.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that, you've got beings that have come from who knows where, and they've combined with other beings to form new life forms. All of them have gone through five different levels of consciousness. We happen to be on the second of the five levels right now. And at the appropriate moment, they just leave. And when they leave, there's no trace of them having been here. And like I suggested earlier, many of them are on levels or were on levels of awareness that's so far beyond where we are today, we can barely begin to imagine.
Can you give us a brief thumbnail on the different levels and what we can expect from knowing that we're on level two, for example?
Yeah, sure. Boy, that's a big question, though, to really, really fill in every aspect of it. But I'll try.
Okay.
Five levels of consciousness, meaning that they're completely different ways of perceiving and interpreting this one reality. The first, third, and the fifth are on unity levels, so mm-hmm. they're one with their world, one with their environment. And interestingly enough, the second and the fifth, and we're on the second, you may have noticed, we are disharmonic.
Mm-hmm.
We will destroy our planet given enough time.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's absolutely necessary for the second and the fourth levels to exist because even though you can stay on the first level for as long as you want, it is unity.
Mm.
There comes a time, you know, when it's time to move on to bigger and better things, so to speak. Only thing is, life has never, ever figured out how to go directly from the first to the third without passing through the second.
Well, let me ask you this. As we talk about, for example, the Mayan calendar and mm-hmm. the huge downloads of, I understand it, energetic consciousness or frequencies and so on, that are infusing us. That's how I understand it anyway. And then there's a great movement toward oneness going on. Do you think that is that evidential of us moving to the third level?
Yes, absolutely it is. That, in fact, is what we're doing very much in process.
Mm-hmm.
And the additional factor there is that there's a dimensional shift that we very much are in the process. Really, the two go hand in hand together. So
it's a little bit exciting. It's not just all destruction right now, right?
There's two things going on simultaneously. There is a new world that is there. It's waiting. It's ready for us. And at the same time, there's an old world that's dying. The second level of consciousness is disharmonic. It will destroy its world given enough time. So this is a level you have to get on and off of as quickly as possible. And, of course, history as we know it, conventional wisdom tells us at least that our history began about 6,000 years ago. And before that, you know, there was nothing but hairy barbarians. I'd suggest there was a lot more to that than that. But really, it's in 6,000 years, you know, look what we've done to the planet. So we can't stay here for much longer. We've got to move.
Well, when you're speaking about there's a new world waiting for us, are you speaking about the shift in our frequency? Or can you talk about that? Because you talk a lot about ascension and our vibrational base and all of that.
Yeah, sure. First of all, let's begin by defining our terms. That when you speak of ascension, what you're talking about is consciously moving from one world to another. It implies that you've mastered the ability to shift your conscious wavelength. Now, wavelength is the key. That's what separates the dimensional worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You've learned how to change your conscious wavelength in a particular manner that enables you, in combination with a 90-degree turn, to move into the dimensional world that you, in fact, have tuned to. So this is something that, well, to take some of the mystery out of it, let's just lay a little bit more groundwork here.
Mm-hmm.
Wavelength really is the key. You know, if you're talking about dimensional worlds, and if I were a mathematician, for example, which I'm not, but if I were, I'd probably be talking to you about things like, you know, hyperspace, 4D, 6D cubed, and, you know, I don't mean any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Really, what I mean, and all I mean, is that every universe that's ever been created, and there's a huge number of them, virtually infinite, every single one of them is passing right through the very room in which you're sitting right now. They're all interlinked, and the only difference between one and the next one is wavelength.
Hmm.
And so
wavelength, the ascension process is learning how to change your wavelengths,
yeah,
adapt to higher frequency.
Yeah, change your conscious wavelength, because you see, the universes themselves are separated in wavelength distances exactly the same as music.
Mm.
So if you go to your piano keyboard and you look at the 8 notes from C to C,
mm-hmm,
and combine that with the 5 black keys in between, you've got the 13 notes of the chromatic scale. Actually, it's 12 because the 13th is the return. You see, wavelength, again, being the key, and then the additional factor is the holographic nature of both music and also of the dimensional worlds, meaning that if you look at your keyboard, there the holographic nature suggests that in between any two notes, you've got the kind of like a miniature version of the 12 notes in this scale. Well, in dimensional terms, you've got an octave, just as you do in music, and you've got the 12 major universes in dimensional terms, and you also have the 12 overtones in between each one. Each overtone is a universe just as vast as this one.
Do you mean access to universe, or you mean the whole entire thing?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Okay, when you say, for example, overtone, is another universe.
Yeah, an overtone is the holographic nature both of music and of the dimensional worlds, because here again, the dimensional worlds are separated by wavelength distances in exactly the same way as music.
Hmm.
So you've got the overtones in between each note in music, and you can translate that directly to the dimensional worlds when you are speaking of waveform, the fact that everything is sound, light, or vibration. And so now, if you look, you know, first we spoke of the chromatic scale being an octave in music on your piano keyboard, but you can also speak of dimensional worlds in the same way. So when you're speaking of dimensional worlds, you've got the 12 major universes And you also have the 12 overtones in between each of the 12 major universes, yet each overtone is a universe just as vast as any of the others. So that gives you 12 times 12, or 144 different dimensional worlds in an octave, and that's only one octave. And just like the octaves repeat themselves on the piano keyboard, they do in dimensional worlds too. So you're talking about something that is so vast that we can barely begin to comprehend it, yet every one of them is passing right through the very room in which you sit.
So tell me this, if we were, let's jump back to the ascension process or changing dimensions. How do we use that information to actually change dimensions ourselves, our consciousness?
Well, it's important to know that it is contained in our DNA.
Okay.
It's important. Maybe we should just take a moment and try and demystify this dimensional thing a little bit.
I'd like changing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So in many ways, it's similar to a TV set. You know, you turn on your TV set and you've got, you are tuned to a certain wavelength frequency, not frequency, but a wavelength transmission.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives you a certain picture on your screen, a certain station that you've tuned into. Now, if you change the channel, what you're doing is changing the wavelength transmission, and that will result in a different picture or a different station appearing on your screen.
Right.
So it's like that, and then when you add to it the fact that the dimensional worlds are all separated by 90 degrees, then it's the combination of remembering that you already know how to make that wavelength, that change in conscious wavelength, so you're tuning to a different dimensional world. Then, in combination with making a 90-degree turn, if you did that, your body would turn into a ball of light and disappear from this world, reappear in whatever world that you've tuned to. You'd be just as real there as you are here.
Well, I haven't had that experience, at least in a conscious way.
Yeah, not in this lifetime, but you have had that experience, given that spirit is eternal and you've been around the block ever since the very beginning. You've been around.
Hmm. Well, let's. That's overwhelming. I just because I'd love to be able to do that, and I bet you a lot of our listeners would too.
Oh yeah.
We'd love to be able to go zip. I just changed my channel, and I'm out of here. You know, not out of here. It's more like an exploration, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's other worlds, and they're all right here. You just have to know how to do it.
You just have to know how. Can you do it, Bob?
This is something that we're all in process. This is not a learning experience. I look at it more as a remembering experience. Mm. Like I say, I'm quite certain this is all contained in our DNA. And so this is leading up to the times that we're in and this enormous change of consciousness that we're right in the middle of right here.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm suggesting is that it's all leading to a change in awareness, the likes of which that we can, on this level, barely begin to imagine. But it seems very likely that, in fact, we're in the process of moving from our third-dimensional awareness into the higher overtones of the fourth dimension, where, in fact, we will step into this third level of consciousness, which is a very high level of unity consciousness.
I really believe that at many levels, actually. I just haven't experienced it quite. I noticed when I was reading, you're a rebirther, aren't you? And for people who don't know what that is, it's a very intense breathing process through which you, purify the body, or you probably have a better way of explaining it.
Yeah, well, the real key here is understanding the value and the importance of prana, which is life force energy. Definitely the most vital of all the elements, because you break prana from spirit for as little as a nanosecond, and that's it. So we all take in prana. We wouldn't be alive if we didn't. Yet we take it in almost infinitesimally small amounts. What the Breath of Life Rebirthing is about is it's learning how to breathe the prana through what I call a circular breathing rhythm, enabling vast quantities of prana to begin coming into the body, the purest of all the elements, life force energy itself. And what it does is it begins waves of energy moving through the body. And it definitely lets you know that you are alive and that your body is energy, and that it's because it's vibrating at a much faster rate right now in process of doing its cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing it does is it starts to bring up emotions that you've been holding on to. You've been doing your best to try and put up with them, try and change, you know, incomplete stuff in your life. Baggage is kind of a term I sometimes like to use. Everybody can relate to that.
Yes, for sure.
You don't need to have a cognitive understanding of what's going on here, simply to realize that the prana is doing its twofold job. Number one, of moving all this energy through your body, and secondly, in the process of doing that, it begins to lift up these emotions, excuse me, or the baggage, if you will, that's less pure than the prana.
Well, it's interesting to me that you're speaking, and this book is very rich in terms of the history of our lineage and so on from way, 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 way back. Mm-hmm. But we do have encoded in us, don't we, traumatic reactions in phases of humanity from thousands of years ago. And you wrote about Lemuria and Atlanta, and you really need to talk about the fall from grace that we've all heard about ad nauseum. All of those things have encoded belief and resistances and so on in us, haven't they?
Yeah, we have, you know, the baggage we carry around. Essentially, it comes from the combination of past lifetimes, yes, absolutely.
But we can remove some of that through the process of rebirthing, for example, and moving the prana through?
Yeah, integrated into your sense of well-being is a term that I prefer to use, because the sources of the baggage is not only past lifetimes, but also being born into this lifetime, and the additional main source is infancy and early childhood, interacting with well-meaning parents, who basically, because they're at the effect of their multi-generational patterns, sometimes act in ways that are inappropriate to, you know, the understanding of perhaps a six-month-old baby who is lying in his or her crib and not getting his or her needs met. Yet if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and mom and dad might be, you know, not exactly on their most understanding behavior, and that's understandable too. But actually, I lost the train there a little bit. Can you re-ask your
question? Well, what I'm thinking is that through the rebirthing, we were talking about shifting dimensions to getting to the third dimension or the fourth world dimension. And I was thinking that the tools are very much a lightening of the load. And I was kind of conscious of the fact that we've had these huge periods in human history, which were very traumatic. And I think we've got a lot of that in us, too.
That's true.
Doesn't that block our oneness? Doesn't that
Yeah,
give
it
us...
does. It does. And it keeps us in the separate state. The separate state meaning that we're looking out at a world that we perceive and experience as separate from us.
Mm-hmm.
We're cut off from it in a certain sense. Further compounded by the fact that we've learned to judge everything. Well, that keeps us immersed in this separate state, or in the state of polarity consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the state of polarity, it's very difficult, virtually impossible, at least on a sustained basis, to perceive and experience the oneness. And so the key here is that instead of putting up with, you know, fighting with or trying to change, you know, things like unresolved emotions, unresolved relationships, et cetera, the key is to begin to realize that this is all living in the body really in two ways. Number one, it's living in the mind in the form of some rather sophisticated subconscious belief systems that
mm-hmm.
hold it in place. But there's another part to it also, and that is the energetic part. Because the relationship or the emotion or whatever it might be is incomplete, it's also living in the body, energetically speaking, in kind of like a stuck state, you know, stuck energy. And furthermore,
so that, for example, is like grief or whatever that sits in there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Grief, when it's incomplete, sadness, if you've lost a loved one, mm-hmm. is going to have both the thought component and the feeling component.
Okay.
And the key, and this is what makes Breath of Life Rebirthing so effective and so efficient, the key is that you can do 100% of the healing totally on the feeling level. And you do that by it's the combination of what I applying what I like to call the five elements of the Breath of Life Rebirthing process. First element is the circular breathing that gets the energy moving. It also begins to lift up emotions and whatever that you've been suppressing. You don't need to understand it. You simply learn to relax in its presence. Mm-hmm. That's the second element.
And let it come through.
Yeah, and the third element tells you basically that it's very much to your advantage to open up your feeling sense. If you're listening to music, you open up your hearing sense. Here, when you're doing the breathing, you open up your feeling sense. And when you do, you begin to notice that there's always a most prominent feeling in your body. You don't need to understand it. You just want to feel it. Mm-hmm. And you want to use the fourth element technique. Remember, there's five elements here. The fourth element technique basically tells you that you need to have a thorough experience of that feeling, basically because you've been resisting feeling it for a long, long time. The only way you can do that is you need to shift your relationship to it. You need to shift the context in which you've held it. The reason it's been incompletion for you is because you've been holding it in an adversary relationship. You've been holding it as a make-wrong, if you will. So you need to find a way to make peace with it. One fourth element technique simply is to give it unconditional love. If you can do that, that will enable you to have a thorough experience of what you're feeling. That, in turn, will inevitably lead to the result called integration. Mm. Integration into your sense of well-being. So you're no longer fighting, resisting it, putting up with it, trying to change it. You've made peace with it in a way that it absolutely is contributing to you in every way. That's the process of stepping out of separation and moving into unity.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to jump around because I don't want to miss the opportunity to go back into our loss of our Garden of Eden. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
story in human history, is the way you told it in your book, is really amazing.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Well, and my where I want to go with that is from that story, getting into like the Martian thing and the Merkaba and all of that stuff that that we all play with, but you've made it clearer.
How much time do we have here?
This is like interviewing the encyclopedia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll do my best here. There's a lot on the plate to cover all of that. In my workshop, it takes really 3 days to complete this discussion.
I can
see,
see why.
What we can do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see what we can do in a few minutes here. I think I suggested earlier, though, that humanity as we know it, Homo sapiens, goes back about 200,000 years.
Right.
And if you look at the oldest known records on the planet, the Sumerian records, what they're telling us is that there's an extra planet in our solar system. It's called Nibiru.
Mm-hmm.
The inhabitants being called the Nephilim, who came here about 450,000 years ago to mine gold. Mining gold because they decided that they needed to suspend gold dust into their upper atmosphere to keep the heat, meaning that their heat source was internal, not external, to keep the heat in. Mm-hmm. And so they came here to mine gold, and after doing it for a couple hundred thousand years, they rebelled and decided to create a subservient race, which evidently is us. And so we initially were created to mine gold, and that was our job. We were slaves.
Hmm.
It went on for probably 70, 80,000 years, and at a certain point in all of this, even though originally we could not reproduce ourselves, we learned how to do that. That's the whole Garden of Eden thing.
We couldn't reproduce because we were hybrid, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So it's kind of like at that point, we split in two. Some of us were hybrids, some of us were able to reproduce, And about 70, 80,000 years into our whole story, there was a shifting of the poles and a shift in the consciousness, and the most advanced of us, meaning those of us from the Garden of Eden, if you will, were taken to Lemuria.
Hmm. Were we kicked out of the Garden of Eden?
I don't think so. I think we were allowed to leave and on our own free will. Don't know the exact specifics on how we got to Lemuria, but...
But in your book, you implied that they weren't thrilled to bits that we learned how to procreate.
Yeah, they didn't want that happening. No. But after a certain point, they seemed to accept it and kind of go along with the program, you know, as if they had a choice at that point. They still had a certain aspect of us to do their gold mining for them. So I guess, you know, it worked for them too, meaning the Nephilim. Hmm. But we ended up in Lemuria for another 70, 80,000 years. We were on the first level of consciousness at that time, unity in harmony, and very much intuitive and feminine, and life was good. But it didn't last forever because Lemuria was slowly sinking from day one. And a lot was going on in Lemuria, including a mystery school called the Nicol Mystery School. From this mystery school, the first wave of ascended masters, the highest aspect of us, came. These are beings that are alive today. They're residing on much higher levels of the Earth's consciousness for the most part, but they're very, very important in our in the, you know, overall aspect of our consciousness and our development. At a certain point, Lemuria sank, and then we went to Atlantis. Mm-hmm. And in Atlantis, things started going downhill a little bit because a group of Martians came in, and they came in without permission. So the plot thickens here.
And they came in because their planet was dying? Is that right?
Yeah. The Mars of about a million years ago. And evidently, at that time, they were a total left-brain culture. You know, logic is all they knew. And when I say total left-brain, what I mean is that their right-brain intuitive sense was not functioning at all. So if you don't know what love and compassion is, all you're left with is domination and control, i.e. war. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what the Martians were doing a million years ago. At one time, it was a beautiful living planet, probably very similar to Earth, but, you know, they ended up blowing their atmosphere away. But a small group of them, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, came to Earth just before this all happened. And evidently, the place that they chose was the area that we know as Cydonia. You know, you've probably heard of the face on Mars.
Yes.
And that's the work that's brought forth from Richard Hoagland. But basically what they did was they went there and they created a... They created what we would call a UFO, only not a hardcore ship that you could get into. Rather, it was done in a series of buildings. There's a whole series of pyramids and what have you there that was very intelligently and consciously constructed for the purpose of creating this time-space vehicle that would get them off of Mars, and it brought them to Atlantis on planet Earth. Well, they came in here.
And where exactly is Cydonia?
Cydonia? Mm-hmm. It's on Mars.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. I speak of it a little bit in my book, but Richard Hoagland wrote a whole book about it called "The Monuments on Mars."
Oh, wow, great!
So that would be kind of like the, you know, the Bible for really getting what the monuments and the face and everything going on in Cydonia is all about. There's so much to that that's just fascinating. I realize I'm taking huge leaps of faith here, and some people might be sitting in the audience going, "What, this guy is nuts." Well, I agree with that completely. But having said that...
Well, you have to break out of the convention to get some wisdom going here.
Well, like I said here, that's a part of it. That's a big part of it. But like I said earlier, that, you know, we really need about 3 days to have the time to fill in all the blanks and lay down all the pieces so that this discussion really, really makes sense. So in the absence of that, I'm just kind of like throwing things at you, making claims and assertions without really being able to back them up. But as wild-eyed as this might seem, there in fact is a significant amount of evidence to, you know, at least somewhat back it up. One of the places you might want to look is the Sumerian records. These are the oldest known records on the planet, and here again, you know, you go to the source if you want to get the best input on what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Many other sources too. But this whole thing about the Martians, they came in about 65,000 years ago, and they tried immediately, because domination control, no mm-hmm. love, no compassion. Mm-hmm. They tried immediately to take over Atlantis, but they couldn't do it. There weren't enough of them, so then they tried to get along with us. But for 50,000 years, it was kind of like a marriage that never really worked very well.
Hmm.
You know, you've got the Martians being the equivalent of maybe a 65 to 70-year-old male, extremely intelligent. They understood every aspect of the reality, but they had no reason to care, no love, no compassion.
Hmm.
And we were about the equivalent of a 12 to 14-year-old female. You know, operating completely on the other side of our brain, intuitive, experiential, their pure logic.
Hmm.
They didn't understand us. We didn't understand them. And it just didn't work very well.
Hmm. That's really interesting. And then you spoke of many of the people listening know about the Merkaba and about the light body where we can shift dimensions if we use it well. But you have an explanation that the Martians used the Merkaba, but only externally and without the... I really thought that was an important thing to teach right now.
Yeah, well, it is. The Merkaba, or Merkaba, you can pronounce it either way. Let's mm-hmm. just take a moment and take a closer look at what Merkaba or Merkaba is. When you break it down, it's actually three words, Mer, Ka, and Ba. And Mer actually refers to light, but not just any kind of light. Specifically, it refers to counter-rotating fields of light. Ka, well, that means spirit, really, in just about all of the ancient languages. And Ba means body or reality. So when you put it all together, what you're talking about is counter-rotating fields that takes both spirit and body with it, implying that it's a vehicle of ascension, which it is. But in fact, it's much more than that. The larger truth is there's nothing it isn't, because it's the image through which all things, underline all, the image through which all things were created, and that image happens to be around your body. And for most people, it's in a dormant state.
Hmm.
But there's two ways that a Merkaba field can be created. One is to create it as a living energy field, to reactivate the energy fields that are already around the body but have been in a dormant state for the last roughly 13,000 years, to get these counter-rotating fields spinning again at up to 9/10 the speed of light, and ultimately through the speed of light, that in combination with making the 90-degree turn enables you to change your conscious wavelength and leave this world and reappear in whatever dimensional world you've tuned to. But there is another way that a Merkaba or a Merkaba field can be created, and that's synthetically, using technology. That's what we would call a UFO, and that's what the Martians did. So if you're creating it synthetically through technology, you don't need the right brain, intuitive love component, compassion component, basically the part of you that is capable of experiencing unconditional love for everything, for all life everywhere.
Mm.
You don't need that if you're going to do it synthetically. And, of course, the Martians had divorced themselves from that side of their brain, so it wasn't possible to create a living field. They had to resort to creating it through technology.
So if we're wanting to activate our own Merkaba, we would be really conscious of that inner heart. Is that what you're saying? That
it's absolutely essential.
Because do you think that's what destroyed their culture?
Yeah, it absolutely is what destroyed their culture when you're speaking of Mars. Because, you see, they, being a total left-brain culture, we're going back a million years now, had but no right brain at all, had no love, no compassion, no reason to care. What that means is you're always fighting. Domination and control is all that's available to you when you have no love and compassion. And so that implies, that means that you're going to be in a constant state of war, which they were. And that's what happened to Mars.
And is that what brought down Atlantis?
That's another interesting aspect in all of this. If you go back about 16,000 years in Atlantis, there was a comet that was coming in. And our technology at the time was very advanced, probably significantly more advanced than what we have right now. We knew it was coming. We had the ability to blow it out of the sky, and that is exactly what the Martians argued for. But those of us who came from Lemuria, still being right brain, intuitive, and feminine, we said, well, no, this is a natural phenomenon. This is God, you know. In other words, let the thing hit. Martians are going, you guys are nuts. But it was allowed to hit. And you can pretty well guess that where it did the damage was exactly where the Martians were staying. A number of them were killed, Martians. And for them, it absolutely was the last straw. They declared divorce, never again. We're going to go our way, you go your way, and all that goes with that. And they immediately set out to recreate the very experiment, the external Merkaba field that got them here in the first place. They did it because their intention was to use it to control planet Earth. Totally illegal, totally against galactic law, yet it could be done. However, I don't know, 50,000 years is a long time, and they may have thought they knew how to recreate this thing, but when they got the counter-rotating fields moving, it became an instant and a complete disaster.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It started ripping open lower dimensional levels of the Earth. The Atlantis just went crazy, and for 3,000 years, it just kept going down, down, and down. The Ascended Masters, they didn't know what to do, but they asked for help from higher sources. They were given enough information to seal up most of the damage, but not all of it. And for 3,000 years, Atlantis just kept getting worse and worse and worse. It came to a point 13,000 years ago where, well, there's a 26,000-year cycle that the Earth goes through.
Right.
There's two points, 180 degrees opposite of each other. This is called the precession of the equinox, by the way. And there are two points on this 26,000-year cycle called the precession where tremendous change on a planetary nature is most likely to take place. This includes nothing less than pole shifts, and it includes also consciousness shifts, i.e. dimensional shifts. Well, 16,000 years ago when this disaster happened, we were 3,000 years until this point came up in the precession, 3,000 years away. So when it got to this point 3,000 years into the future, that would be 13,000 years into our past, the Ascended Masters knew exactly what was going to happen, and that is that we would fall from a very high level of awareness, and we were at a much, much higher level of awareness than we're at right now, not even close. They knew that basically we would be in free fall from a very high level until essentially we crash-landed down on this dark, dense aspect of the reality that we now call home. And along with that, our memory, for the most part, was completely lost. The Ascended Masters kept theirs going. The Mayans kept theirs going because they had living Merkaba fields to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have either a living or synthetic Merkaba field to protect you when you go through a dimensional shift, your memory will be completely erased.
Hmm. Well, tell me, I'm rushing it only because I've only got like 10 minutes with you, and that's not enough. But but Nibiru is supposed to be coming close again, right?
Yes, right.
And
you just go
so,
on the internet and type in Nibiru, and you have a ball with all that'll come up.
And all the predictions and so on. But can you kind of bring us into today, given us this the only thumbnail foundation? Your book is so rich, and I'm sure your workshops are, but can you talk a bit about today and how we're at a polarity shift and consciousness shift, and Nibiru is supposed to be coming, and doodly-doo?
Good. We got 10 minutes to do that?
We do.
Okay, good. I'll see what I can do.
You're doing really well so far. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Good, thanks. Well, to get us up to speed today, we actually have to pick up again on what happened 13,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when we fell down to the third dimensional level. And that is the ascended masters were given, you might say, a game plan from higher life forms, ultimately for the total healing and salvation of Mother Earth. It's not something that could happen in a day or in a night. It's taken 13,000 years to complete itself. Essentially, the essence of it is that if they could get us into a higher level of awareness from where we were in Atlantis, in other words, to get us from the first to the third level of consciousness, which is an upgraded form of unity consciousness in every way from what we experienced in Atlantis, if they could get us into that upgraded form of unity consciousness, then our newfound awareness would instantly be able to solve the problem of this out-of-control Merkaba field, which, by the way, is still out of control today. That's the Bermuda Triangle. And
you've perhaps
heard,
yeah,
planes and ships, books have been written about this, how planes and ships just mysteriously disappear.
Yes.
They get sucked into a different dimensional level, and if you're not ready for it, good luck. So that's what's been going on for the last 13,000 years. In order to go from the first to the third level, there's two basic things that have to happen. First is you have to create a, let's just call it an energy field that encircles the entire grid that is representative of this third level of unity consciousness. Mm-hmm. Without that, you can't go there. You've got to have that energy field that encircles the globe. Well, that doesn't happen just overnight. They had to synthetically begin the process of creating that. It took 13,200 years to finish the job, and it only really was complete in January of 2008. It's now a self-aware living energy field above there, and that gives us the vehicle to move into this higher level of unity consciousness.
And do we participate in that by being aware of it?
Oh, we're participating in a way that life has never ever seen before. The acceleration on this planet, everything is vibration. And your vibratory rate is going into that energy field around the grid. That's what's enabling all of this to come forth. It's the critical mass that really is beginning to move into, you know, the love and compassion and the unity way of dealing with things, where it's the realization that we're all one. That's a very high vibratory rate, and as we are continuing to create this critical mass, that's really what's enabling all this to happen. But there's another factor that we must include here in this 13,000-year years of our past history, and that is that you can't go directly from the first to the third level of consciousness. You've got to pass through the second level, and there's an ascended master by the name of Thoth. Way back about 5,000 to 6,000 years ago in Egypt, he introduced writing to us, and that's the very act that threw us out of the first level and into the second level that we're in right now. It changed everything. Changed our height, changed the number of chromosomes, changed the way we access memory, moved us out of unity into a polarity consciousness in a separate state. but it was absolutely
writing?
Necessary.
Actual writing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. writing. Mm-hmm. Because you see, before that, on the first level, we didn't need writing because we had 100% recall. Mm. We had the ability to holographically recreate at any point in the future any event that we had previously lived, step into the hologram, bring your friends and family with you. They could all step into the hologram and, in so doing, recreate your earlier experience with 100% recall. Hmm. So you don't need reading or writing if you've got that.
Right.
But it's the introduction of writing through Thoth that threw us out of that holographic memory into a memory that is so dysfunctional right now that we have trouble remembering our zip codes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even begin to approximate holographic 100% memory.
Mm.
But it was the very necessary act to throw us into the second level in preparation. This stepping stone, this necessary stepping stone to get us into the third level, this higher level of unity consciousness. So you put this all together. Well, we are at the other end of this cycle in this 26,000-year precession of the equinox, sitting right on the bubble where these tremendous changes are happening again.
Mm.
And that's nothing less than a shift in consciousness, i.e. a dimensional shift into the higher overtones, 10th, 11th, or 12th overtone of the fourth dimension, where we will step into this higher level of unity consciousness and really begin to realize that, you know, we've just won the game of life.
So do you think we're going to make it through this polarity that is just driving us all crazy and is creating so much murder and war and so on? And
that's a good question, because on the surface, you look out there and say, what's this guy talking about?
Mm-hmm.
The gap between, you know, the polarity has never been wider. There's wars everywhere you look.
Mm-hmm.
The deficit, people are broke, people are out of their homes.
And food's poisoned, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Right. What we have to remember is that simultaneously there are two things happening at once. There's a new world that's being born,
mm-hmm.
a much higher vibratory rate a world. This is the dimensional shift I'm speaking of. And at the same time, there's an old world here that's dying.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we're the second level of consciousness, and this is disharmonic. We will destroy our world, give it enough time. And we've almost done that.
Mm-hmm. And but we can make the shift to the third consciousness level.
Yeah, we're sitting right on the bubble in this 26,000-year cycle.
So, Bob, right, what do we do? Do we sing? Do we move? Because I noticed when you're talking about music, I'm going, we actually thrill to music, which to me means shifting your fields and frequencies and so
yeah.
on, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. You just keep going for that which you wish to create. Be the best expression of yourself that you can possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, we are all vibration. We're all energy. And if you're vibrating out of fear and out of, you know, being at the effect of the chaos that's going on and revenge, and I'll get even with you if it's the last thing I do, you're vibrating at a very dense rate.
Right.
And if we go into, you know, 6.5 billion people into mass fear, then it's going to be a very rough ride from one world to another.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of it is, there's a critical mass that's being formed. You know, everybody who's listening to this is part of that critical mass. They wouldn't be listening to this if they weren't.
That's true.
And so what they're beginning to discover is that there's something greater than getting even and revenge and what's in it for me. They're beginning to discover, not just conceptually, but also experientially, that the greater truth is that there's only oneness. Mm-hmm. There is no separation. There's only one spirit moving throughout all the cosmos on all the levels. And so that spirit moves within each and every one of us. We're all intimately connected to the whole. And in that context, there is no separation. You're speaking of cells in the larger body all contributing to the good of the whole, because the oneness is in harmony with itself. You know, just as though all the trillions of cells in your body, they're all working together because they love you. You're the greater whole. You're the greater body.
So the tools are love and music and appreciation and inspiration and breath. And is that right?
Yeah, working on yourself, increasing your vibratory rate, you know, handling your unfinished business. That's the great opportunity that this breath of life rebirthing represents that we've talked about a little bit here. It enables you to integrate into your sense of well-being those aspects of yourself, you know, that if you really want to be at peace with somebody, you need to feel it. If you don't feel it, you're just fooling yourself. Mm-hmm. And many people are walking around doing exactly that.
So the rebirthing is a really great way to learn to feel the purification of reaction to people?
It's an enormously useful tool.
So is that what you're doing? And what are your workshops? Because if I were to come to one, what would I expect there? Would I get to shift my consciousness level on those 3 days?
Well, the first thing, and this is perhaps the most important aspect of it, really the entrance requirement, is your willingness to be there in the first place. You can't force feed this stuff to anybody.
Right.
So given your willingness, I give 2 3-day workshops. One is called the Flower of Life. The other one is called the Breath of Life, where in essence, what I'm doing is recreating the ancient Egyptian mystery schools. The breath of life, that's the breath of life rebirthing that we've talked about here, really that focuses on the breathing and the emotional healing and learning how to harmonize with the process of the prana moving through your body in such a way that you learn that you can produce the result called integration into your sense of well-being with 100% reliability. Mm-hmm. That's the emotional healing. That's the right brain aspect. Then the Flower of Life focuses more on showing the left brain the unity of being. There's only one image, only one creation pattern, only one spirit moving through all life everywhere. The reason that's important, I'm not sure how much time we have, but I'll...
Probably about 1 minute.
I'll be brief.
Oh, no, we have 2 minutes.
2 minutes, good. We have enough time. Go back to when you're 4 or 5 years old. You're looking, you know, you've got all the sense of wonder and awe that only a 4 or 5 year old has. You're looking up at the night sky. It's beautiful, perfectly clear night. You see the stars. You may not have the words for it, but you just know, as only a 4 or 5 year old can, that you're part of this greater whole. You just absolutely know it. So that part of us, the right brain side, really doesn't have a problem interpreting or experiencing the unity. But the left brain, it looks out at the reality and it sees nothing but separation and division. It's been taught to judge everything. It's right or it's wrong. It's good or it's bad. It needs to be shown. It needs to be shown that there is only one image through which every single thing in this entire created reality came through. That's the same thing as saying one spirit moving through all life. It needs to be shown the unity of being.
So you teach it, basically.
Yeah, in the Flower of Life, we use the eternal language, the language that's known throughout the cosmos called sacred geometry, to show that there is only one creation pattern.
Wonderful.
And then we go on to teach the Merkaba through a 17-breath meditation that... ultimately is the vehicle of ascension, enabling you to travel from one world to another.
And are you able to do that, Bob?
In a sense, we're all able to do that. Like I said, it's a remembering, not a learning experience. And but I know what you're asking. You know, like, have I, in my spare time, traveled throughout the universes and have brought back the conscious memory and all that? In this lifetime, no.
Okay.
But it is available to all of us. My sense of it is that we're simply going to remember. We're going to know that this is something that is just basically us. It's in our DNA. When this dimensional shift is happening, I'm quite certain we're going to remember that we know how to do this. Oh, yeah, here we go again.
Yeah, I'm eager for that.
My conscious wavelength, make my 90-degree turn and reappear in the new world, and here I am. Hey.
And nothing in this book is true, but it's exactly how things are. This is a wonderful revised edition of Bob's book, and I find it so intriguing, enticing, and it just speaks at a deep level. Something in me understands exactly what it's saying, you know?
Yeah.
So tell people how to get hold of you, Bob.
Real easy. Just go to my website, bobfrizell.com.
It's two S's and two L's?
Yeah, F-R-I-S-S-E-L-L, bobfrizell.com. And you can order my books and CDs and DVDs, and also see my workshop schedule up on my website. It's all there.
Well, this has been very intriguing, and I know we just touched the very, very surface, but when you're talking 500,000 years, it's pretty hard to get right into the whole thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you for your time, Bob, and thank you for your heart in the world. It's really rich.
Oh, you're welcome, Veronica. It's a pleasure. I've loved every minute of it. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying that was Bob Frizell, and oh my goodness, what an amazing tour he's done with his learning through our history, the history of our planet. And I really love concentrating on this amazing shift of consciousness that we're all experiencing right now. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, email me if you want to make comments or if you have any suggestions of other guests. Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com, or if you want a session with me or even with Bob Frizell, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. Many blessings. Thank you for listening, and good night, everyone.